Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Power Hour, the Athletics Tuesday National College Football Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Nicole Auerbach. And I'm joined by our good friend and colleague from Stadium, Michael Felder. And this is part two of a series we're doing on contenders, although this is the actual contenders portion. We talked about some teams last week, and you can scroll up the feed for that, that could have some special seasons if things go right. But Felder, today we are doing the real title contenders, the ones that everyone has already penciled in for the playoff, and we're going to maybe poke some holes in them, or at least give us some questions for them.
Yeah, I think the key is going to be kind of like, how can you hurt them? What's their weakness? Everybody talks about what you have, what's coming back. It's especially, it's a weird year to talk about returning starters because
Everybody's got them.
But that's one of the, like, and I don't know if lazy is the right word, but it is the word I'm going to use. It's one of the lazy, oh, this team will be good because they returned this many starters. That doesn't really hold true this year on a lot of different levels, but it's still a metric that a lot of folks use. So we're going to kind of approach it from the other way, right? Like, we're going to look at what don't you have. And, like, yes, we'll highlight some of the big spots or the proven spots that are going to be your kind of the backbones, but you got to fill in holes, and everybody's got holes to fill.
Yeah, that's a good little cheat sheet. If other people are just talking about this team's going to be good because of X returning starters, they probably did not actually prepare for the season or think about things. But this actually, unless they're talking about a group of five team, because I do think that there's possibly more depth in some of those programs, like Cincinnati, than others. But we are here to talk about the four main national championship contenders and their biggest questions. So we are going to hit Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Felder, your choice for where to start.
I mean, let's just go alphabetical order, honestly. So this doesn't mean anything about who we think is 1, 2, 3, 4. This is purely an exercise in alphabetical order. I like doing it that way.
Okay. Let's go. Alabama.
Yeah. Look, you look at Alabama, and like the biggest thing, and I know that you wrote it in the doc, is it's losing a ton of production, right? You lose your quarterback, you lose your running back, you lose two quality wide receivers. I mean, that's the key. How do you replace that much production? I think that's the big thing.
So here's where I start with that. And I know that everyone is assuming that they will be able to do this just fine.
Sure.
And our colleague, Ari Wasserman, who has lots of hot takes that we don't agree with all the time, has one that I actually very much agree with about preseason rankings, that Alabama didn't need to be number one because of all of these questions, because of replacing like the best offense they've ever had, one of the best offenses we've seen in college football, and all the talent at the skill position. Like, we could wait and see who becomes, you know, like how Bryce Young is, and like, you know, how the run game works and how the passing attack looks before we, you know, kind of have this coronation. I mean, it's kind of this assumption. We think that everything is going to be fine because they just reload. But like, there was historical elements to what we saw last year.
Yeah, they were super good. And the reality is, I know Bryce Young is a massive talent. So the question is going to be, how quickly does he get up to speed? I thought the Slade Bolden and John Metchie looked really good when they got on when they got into the game. They were quality, reliable wide receivers. So that's also one of those. Oh, by the way, the guy that we're talking about, kind of, he did start because Jalen Waddle went out. Metchie did end up getting a lot of real burn. 55 catches. That's a sizable number for almost 1,000 yards. So you look at the production, and yes, it's Harris. Yes, it's Waddle. Yes, it's Smith. But what's return? They do. This is one of those teams. It's maybe it's not returning starters the way that we think of it traditionally, except for up front, that offensive line. Goodness gracious, I love those guys. But it is Jahlil Billingsley getting to kind of break into his own, which is going to be really interesting. He's incredibly talented. I think that he can have, and I think because of this philosophy switch, he's probably one of the most interesting players for me with Alabama, because as a tight end, it does feel like we might be able to get out of him what a lot of us were calling for to get out of O.J. Howard 6-7 years ago. And I think that could be a real difference maker that does take some pressure off the quarterback, that does take some pressure off the run game, and does also open things up for Mechie and Bolden.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm interested in too, just what that passing game looks like, because they've just had such an embarrassment of riches at the receiver position. And obviously we've seen injuries, we've seen different things. But this is a less experienced group. And so I do think the tight end position can do some things to open things up for Bryce Young and the run game, that will look a little bit different. And obviously you've got a different, you know, Steve Sarkisian's off of Texas, like things will be a little bit different.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, say what you want about him as an NFL head coach, his quick flash in the pan at Penn State that got him the NFL job. He is a good offensive mind. And this is someone that Saban trusts because of those ties to Belichick. And that's all kind of wrapped into one thing. And I think we're going to see an offense that it doesn't sound fair, but I think they're going to do a lot of the stuff that we saw Deshaun Watson and the Texans do. And they're going to be operating at that level, not just at a college level. They're going to ask Bryce Young to do things that NFL quarterbacks do, and I think that's going to be good for his maturation.
Now let's flip it to the defensive side. I think we obviously have less overall questions. I think just based on what's returning, I think we feel really good about linebackers. What, if any, areas concern you?
See, here's the thing. I don't know that I feel really good about it. I understand the returns. I'm super excited for Henry To'o. I think he's like Alabama hasn't had that linebacker. Like I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was like, Rolando McClain, Dont'a Hightower, C.J. Mosley. They thought Dylan Moses was going to be that guy, and Dylan Moses really was not that guy, and To'o could be that guy. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, you've got an experienced guy, Chris Allen. I'm just curious to see what they look like getting after the quarterback. I love LeBryan Ray. He is like a bigger version of Joey Porter to me. Obviously, plays with his hand down a lot more, but the way that he's so ferocious and pushes and controlling does have a little bit of Joey Porter, who was an outside linebacker for the Steelers ages ago. So I want to see how they get to the quarterback. I'm looking forward to the reality of it is this is about one hand washing the other, and it's about whether it's Will Anderson or Drew Sanders or I think those will probably end up being the two main guys. If it's about those guys getting to the quarterback, but it's also about the secondary, because what we've seen is if Alabama cannot get to the quarterback or the quarterback can get out of the way, then the secondary has had problems. And they've had problems that started with, and especially if you've got a combo mobile quarterback and a big receiver, but we're talking about a problem that existed 2010 with Steven Garcia picking up 30-something yards on the ground, and then Alshon Jeffrey just going over the top. Obviously, Johnny Manziel in, not 2012, in 2013 with Mike Evans just going up and over the top. And although A&M lost that game, I think that was the first mark of true fear for Nick Saban, realizing I have to score 48 points to win. This is insane. And then the same thing happens with Ole Miss.
Yep,
and obviously, the same thing's happened with Ole Miss, where he needed, what, a Deron Payne recovery in the end zone, and then another A'shaun Robinson or Jonathan Allen, like a long interception return or fumble return. He needed those points to win the football game while Ole Miss was doing it with their offense. And then obviously the major strike is Deshaun Watson in back-to-back championship games and using an onside kick and needing a kick return from Kenyon Drake to win a football game. So because of that, we have seen this secondary, no matter how many guys get picked out of it, right? Doesn't matter if it's Landon Collins or it's Marlon Humphrey or it's any of these guys. We have you playing defensive back is one of the hardest things to do in all of college football. They call too many pass interferences. They bail out quarterbacks for bad throws. And you have to do everything perfect. And even if and even then, if the receiver's good, you still might be out, you still might be SOL. So I like Jordan Battle. I think he's a tough guy. I really do. And I love seeing these tough guys for Alabama. I think he's a guy that is probably better going down than going backwards. So you have to deal with that. How do you handle that? Do you play one high? Do you want to play him too high and not have him be as critical of a part of your rushing, of your rush defense? Can you stop it with the seven up front? How do they put your seven up front in conflict between zone read and package plays and RPOs? So the one hand washing the other of the pass rushers and the secondary, I think, is the biggest question, because doesn't matter if it was Clemson or LSU, whoever, like, we see that they can be had if you don't get to that quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that's also where it comes into reloading on the offensive side, because they know how to win those games now that way because of how they built the offense. And we've talked so much about that shift from Saban, the willingness to adapt and modernize his offense to the game. So they can win these games both ways, but it still is jarring to see Alabama's defense give up big plays. Like, and that still does happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Like, happens to everybody.
That's what college football is now. It's giving up big plays. Clemson had a great defense a couple seasons ago, and they gave up humongous plays because you got corners out on an island because you're trying to commit more to the pass rush. Guys are on an island. Safety can't get there. Quarterback looks them off. Next thing you know, it's one-on-one. You slip, it's a touchdown. The quarterback underthrows the ball and you run into the guy, it's a touchdown. Or excuse me, it's a pass interference, a free first down. You mistime your long arm for the ball. Oh, he catches it, it's a touchdown. He goes up and over you and takes the ball away from you when you're in prime position. Now we got a huge play too. So it's really hard to play that position.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So you mentioned Clemson and Clemson's defense. So let's go to team number two.
Yep.
You know, these are teams, again, everyone's penciling them in. We expect them to reload. We don't even, you know, we're plenty of reasons to be excited about the next guy up at quarterback and next guy up at all these other positions. So let's start there. I mean, for you, when you look at Clemson with DJ, you know, Venable's still there, certainly on the defensive side. You know, Jeff Scott is gone a couple years, but Tony Elliott is still there after the Tennessee flirtation. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you start when you look at this Clemson roster? Also, Justin Ross is back, so we'll get into that in a second too.
I just want to see the production, the wide receiver production specifically. Obviously, you get Ross back, that's a good thing, but I didn't walk away super impressed with Ngata and Ladson a year ago. And I know obviously there were guys in front of them, so that's a part of it. But I had such, like, obviously following them from a recruiting standpoint, my hopes were remarkably high on what they were going to bring to the table. And like seven games out of Joseph, and we got 10 games out of Ladson, but not a ton of production. And obviously, again, I know when Amari Rodgers has 77 catches and 53 go to Cornell Powell, what a breakout year from mm-hmm. him. I thought that was remarkable. Then 48 catches for ATN, that's remarkable too. So I think that the ball can only go to so many players. So now I need to see them actually step up to be what everyone that followed them in recruiting thought they were going to be or hoped they could be. So I think that's a question that does have to be answered. And I think it's one that's also worth asking because it's so important to the pace that they play at that he can trust these guys. And it's nice to get Ross back as a guy you know you can trust. But watching these guys grow and settle in is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and I think I'm a little bit higher on those guys than you are because, you know, again, they weren't asked to do a lot. I mean, think about...
It's not that I'm not high on them. Like, I thought they were going to be, like, step on the scene and be ballers immediately. And they just couldn't compete with the guys that were in front of them. And last year I thought even, okay, yes, Amari Rodgers, I expect him to be, like, their go-to quick hit guy. But then when Ross is out, I'm like, okay, so who's going to step up? And it ultimately ends up being the senior Cornell Powell, right, having an amazing season. And then instead of those guys being receivers 3 and 4, they are now pushed down further because ATN had the big year. So it's not that I'm not high on them. Like, I love these kids coming out, like doing recruit. Like, we used to do a show called Emerge, and we had so many clips. Like, we did a highlight clip segment, and I was like, oh my God, these guys are going to be dogs at Clemson. I'm just ready for them I'm ready for the dogs to grow up. That's it. I'm ready.
And I think it's going to be, I mean, these guys are going to be those next great Clemson receivers. I think that has been such a strength of this program and has been such a, you know, kind of defining bit of this offense, this wide receiver U, which lots of people love to claim. So I'm excited to see Justin Ross. I'm glad he's back. He's been kind of recounting how emotional it's been to be cleared, to be able to play football again. And I think there's a reason everyone's, you know, kind of already penciling him as like a first team All-American type, because, you know, we saw how special he was 2 years ago. And for DJ Uiagalelei, like, we obviously saw him more than we expected to last year when Trevor, was dealing with COVID, but that's such a luxury to have a guy like that where, you know, I remember when it was Justin Ross and T. Higgins talking to the coaches and anyone around that program about just when a guy has a catch radius like that, you don't have to be perfect and you know he can get up and get it. And so that's going to be fun to watch. And then Lynn J. Dixon taking over for Travis Etienne at the running back position, and just interested to see, you know, how they retool the offense after, you know, Trevor and Travis for so long.
I like Lynn J. I don't know if he's going to be as active in the pass game, but the reason he probably won't be as active in the pass game is because he can block. Like, he was the guy that Clemson put in 2 years ago when they wanted to – him and Taven Feaster were getting in the game a couple years ago when they wanted to throw the football because they knew that ATN was a liability in pass protection. So I'm curious to see how they juggle his load. Do you keep him in the game on third downs and let him block, or do you send him out in the routes to create a truly – empty backfielder, to create five-man routes? And that's also going to depend on how mature DJ Uiagalelei is. So, and the other thing for me, also excited to see Will Shipley. Very. Like, kid that's from outside of my hometown. A lot of folks thought because he had some ties to NC State, he might end up there. But nope, went to Clemson. And I want to see how they use him. I like him as a running back. Let's play him at running back. But I'm sure they're going to find a bunch of different ways to move him around. Kid's a pro, so this is going to be fun.
And let's flip over to the defensive side. What are the biggest question marks for you? Is it getting at the quarterback?
Well, you talk to Grace a lot, and I just still want – I would love any sort of a definitive answer on Xavier Thomas.
Yeah.
That's my biggest question. It's not about anything that's going to happen on the field. Like, is he okay? Is he going to play? What does he look like? Like, how much weight has he lost? How much strength has he lost? How much functional strength has he retained? How much explosiveness has been retained? Like, all those things, just from a guy who, as a freshman, backing up those 4 NFL draft picks, I had one of my buddies is a scout. He said, man, they're good, but that kid 3 might be the best one out of all of them. And then to see him really suffer a season ago was really rough, to see him not be able to play and whatnot. So that's my biggest question. Overall, the next question I probably have would be depth, especially up front. I know folks are saying it doesn't matter that they lose Niles Pinckney. It doesn't matter that Jordan Williams transfers. But those guys are what I like to call quality depth, experience depth. So I get it that you've got Trey Williams and you have Moskal back there. Like, you have some of those, but they don't have the experience that those other players had. Especially Pinckney. I mean, Pinckney is the guy that helped shut down that fake field goal. So losing them, I do feel like it tightens up your freedom. Like, maybe they don't run an 8-man rotation this year. Maybe it's down to 6. And that means guys are going to get gassed. And what does that look like in the fourth quarter when you're trying to get to the quarterback and you maybe don't have it? So that's the question. That's my big question. The other loss too, Mike Jones. That was, I do think that will be felt in some way, unless Trenton Simpson is as advertised. He's a guy, I loved him coming out of, did he go to Vance High School? I know he's from North Carolina. I can't remember if he went to Vance or Power Eccles went to Vance. But anyways, point being, Trenton Simpson, heck of a ball player. I've gotten to see him in person at a couple of events, and he's got the build, he's got the speed, he's got the look. Like, I'm not putting Isaiah Simmons on him, but I am saying that I think he's going to play. He's gonna make a lot of plays going away and going towards the football.
How concerned are you on the back end? Big plays. I mean, I feel like we're going to talk about this with each of these defenses. We're certainly going to talk about it with Oklahoma and Ohio State too. Level of concern.
Nolan Turner is one of my favorite college football players ever. The fact that they were able to put him into the national championship game in 2018, the 2018 season. They won that championship, right?
They won in, yeah.
Yeah. That was the death row speech after. But Nolan Turner is a part of why they won that football game when they took out Tanner Muse for freelancing. And he just does his job. Him and James Skowski. Those two guys got put into the game when other starters were freelancing, and they've been able to ride that wave into making some big plays. I wonder what it looks like vertically down the field if they can't get to the quarterback. And this is the same question we're going to hear over and over and over and over again. Darren Kendrick being gone.
Yeah, big loss.
I thought he was going to go to the NFL a season ago. And then I opened up Twitter one day, and it's like, oh, he's at Georgia now. I was like, oh, my goodness. Okay, got it. So, I don't know. I think Landon Zanders has to take a big step forward. And that's going to be critical to them feeling comfortable rocking and rolling and spinning down their safeties so that they have extra bodies and run, or they play too high over the top. So we'll see what his growth looks like. I don't feel – if I had to say which one I feel stronger about, Clemson or Alabama secondary, probably Bama's, but not by a ton. And it's going to be interesting to see how teams attack both of these guys. Like, you're going to have to – at some point, and I think about it, whether it's like conservative teams like Pitt or Boston College, like, you're at some point you're gonna have to take a chance down the field.
We'll see if Georgia does. I mean, this is something we were talking about last week. Are they gonna actually throw the ball?
Yeah, that's a huge question mark. Are they gonna do it? Because that's gonna be the way that you punish these teams. You punish them for creeping into the box. You punish them for keeping one safety high. You punish them for blitzing early in downs. Like, you should punish a first down blitz. Punish it. Go up and over. Go throw right behind it, and let's go play football. So we'll see if teams are willing to attack or if they want to just play let's not mess up football against them.
And just to circle back on that, 2018 season, 2019 national championship game is the one we were just talking about. All right, let's go to Ohio State. I'm pretty interested in this. We're coming off of news on Monday. C.J. Stroud is separating himself at the quarterback position, which is basically, I think, as close as we're going to get to he's going to be the starter week one. But, you know, they don't want everyone to immediately transfer behind him. They got a really loaded quarterback room. But, you know, that is one of the questions facing Ohio State is the lack of experience at the quarterback position. That hasn't been a problem in the Ryan Day era as they've undergone these offensive changes. I still think Chris Olave is going to end up being the best receiver in the country. So I don't have, you know, I mean, I think the biggest question is
better than Justin Ross.
Well, Justin, I mean, have we seen him fully healthy yet? I mean, until we see that, I'm going to go with Chris Olave, the walking highlight reel.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it. He's good. He's really good.
He is. So I think Stroud would still qualify as a question mark, even though he's going to be really good.
Yeah, but it's still a question mark because he has gotten no burn. Like he hasn't done anything. And so him, then what? He's backed up by, what's the kid's name? Jack Miller. Mm-hmm. Two young guys behind. Like, it's sink or swim. And we saw early, obviously, that, like, we saw, what was it, a year ago? Spencer Rattler, right? Took a little time. Maybe if Spencer Rattler had got a little more touch, a little more experience, they don't drop that early game, right? And they're able to hang around. So if you're going to get Ohio State, in the way that I'm looking at it at least, is get them early and do all the stuff that I just talked about. Blitz on first down. Change your levels. Change your picture. Change what he sees. And the other thing that we know, and this is, I guess I will file this into questions about the offense, how Ryan Day manages this quarterback spot. And by that, I mean, we've seen him let guys play. And what I mean by that, Justin Fields versus Clemson, the ability to let him play, they were able to use tempo, they were able to get in and out of runs versus passes and let Justin Fields call his football game the way he needed to call it. And then we saw against Alabama a level of micromanaging that paralyzed this offense and didn't allow them to take advantage of the same mistakes they took advantage of against Clemson, where Clemson wasn't lined up. Fields got the ball snapped. Fields got the ball to where he needed it, and now we got another play. We got a first down. Let's do it again. Against Alabama, trying to call the perfect play ultimately gives the defense an opportunity to get set up, and then you end up with nothing. And I think that's going to be critical, especially where this is a quarterback in C.J. Stroud. There's no way he has as much confidence in him as he had in Justin Fields a year ago. So what does he let him do? It's a two-part question here. What can C.J. Stroud do, both mentally and physically? And I think we know the answer to the physical part. He's going to do just about everything. But I think mentally, what can he do? And then what Ryan Day lets him do? That's the biggest question to me.
And let me add one layer to that that's a little bit more existential about managing that quarterback room. There's just a lot of talent in it. And Quinn Ewers reclassifying and showing up early. How do you manage all of that? Because he's one of the more interesting, even if he doesn't play, which, I mean, I'm sure he'll get into some games at some point. And Ryan Day is making it clear he's not going to start. I mean, we're 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Like, he just got there. But the idea of reclassifying because of NIL, getting somewhere earlier, trying to manage the highest ranked quarterback recruit ever, and mixing that in, what does that mean for depth at the position? What does that mean for experience? What does that mean for the transfer portal?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, you got to let them know we're going to give everybody a fair shake.
But do you immediately lose Jack Miller and Kyle McCord? Like, what else happens to that room once we get underway here? Like, that's where I'm saying, like, it's so hard. We have seen talented quarterbacks transfer from Oklahoma, from Georgia, from Clemson. Sure. We've seen, so like, I just, but, it's more of an existential thing. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do with these quarterback rooms.
I'm not going to take, like, Oklahoma's for me felt like they gave them a fair shake. They decided to leave after they didn't win the job. Georgia did not feel like a fair shake when we're talking about Justin Fields. It also probably didn't feel like a fair shake to Jacob Eason either. He lost his job when he was hurt, and then they were like, no, we're a Fromm football team from now on. So he's like, okay, I'm leaving. Fields was like, I'm not even getting a chance to do anything. Okay, I'm leaving. I think the key to massaging these situations is being serious about giving people a fair opportunity. And what that looks like is mostly stuff people don't see, but that's practice time, and it's practice. It's also, like, whether they rotate McCord and Ewers from scout to up over the course of the season so that they're a part of the offense. I'm sure they're going to be in every single quarterback meeting instead of just going to the scout team quarterback meeting. So, or the scout team meeting. I'm sure they're going to, you know, all travel. I'm sure. And it's about fair shake and just saying, hey, man, this year you're not ready. Be ready for spring. We'll see what you could do. Everything's up for grabs. You have to, like, and I get it, quarterbacks are special and they're different, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. But this is the way they treat every other position on the field. And maybe quarterbacks are so remarkably fragile that they don't realize that because they've always been told they're the most important player and that they're the special ones. But every position gets treated, listen, I'll give you a fair shake. If you get the job done on the chalkboard, you get the job done on the practice field, you're going to get your opportunity. Don't walk away from it. You'll get your chance. All you have to do is keep getting better. And I think that we've got to, at some point, quarterbacks are going to have to realize like that's the way that it works.
Yeah, I think they get to be in a position where people say only one plays and
sure,
they move around now. All right, let's go other question marks. Any others offensively, or you want to move the defensive?
Well, the other thing is, like, and to put a button on the quarterback point, the other part is these guys can't do anything else. Like, you can make a safety happy by putting him on special teams. You can make the offensive lineman happy by putting him on field goal. You can put him on PAT. I've seen teams do it. They make sure guys get snaps by putting them on PAT, putting them on kickoff return, putting them on whatever. And quarterbacks have such a limited skill set that they can't help you any other way except playing quarterback. So, I mean, it's one of those things where I don't know. I don't hate quarterbacks, but I do think that if they could do anything else, they'd probably be in a pretty nice position to feel like they're contributing.
Oh, you mean so Tim Tebow switching over to tight end and trying to block isn't the same skill set?
Yeah, it's I mean, I understand the type of block that the blocks that he missed, and the guy dove down, and honestly, the guy's goal was to wrong arm Tebow, and Tebow did wipe that guy out of the play, but he also should have realized he's so far down he can't get there and go combo up to the top. But that's another story for another day.
Okay. All right, so give me other weaknesses or areas to attack for the Buckeyes.
Jeez, I mean, I love Taraji Mitchell. Another one of my favorite players ever. I called one of his games when he was at Bishop Sullivan, and the kid is remarkable. I think Zach Harrison is going to be a real problem. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be a very serious problem. And then I'm looking forward to seeing however many reps Jack Sawyer gets. Because he comes in as one of the highly touted defensive linemen, and he's playing behind Tyreek Smith, which is going to be nuts. So I think that if we had to circle a spot, I think that it's the inexperience at linebacker in terms of big moments. I know they got aged players there. You know, Kayvon Pope is a senior, and Dallas Grant's is a senior. But the reality of it is that you've got to – it's not as many. They haven't had as many reps because you were playing behind, what was it, Tough Borland and Pete Werner and Baron Browning were getting more of those reps. So it's going to be about them getting up to speed very quickly. And realistically, like, they're going to have to rotate those guys in and find the three that work, or the two and the combo player that work. And that takes rotation, because the scariest part about linebacker, it's very similar to offensive line, and the secondary, actual units, like offensive line, linebacker, and secondary, and to some extent defensive line, depending on how slants games and all those things you run. But those are units, and sometimes units, it's not always putting you can't always put your best five on the field the way you want, or your best three on the field, or your best four or five on the field. You got to make sure that these players all work in concert. And so for Ohio State, I think the added task for them is going to be finding out what linebackers work best in unison in a game situation, because it might end up being, hey man, we've got to move Taraja to the mic, we're going to move Gant to the will, we're going to take Ronnie Hickman out, and we're going to put Kayvon there at the Sam, and that's going to be what works for us, because those guys, they work push and pull, they work together. And so going to be curious to see how that works. I think in the back end, I want to see Seven Banks kind of, I don't know if bounce back is the right word, but I want to see him have a good year. I want to see him have a really good year. Like, that's probably the biggest thing that I'm looking for, is I want to see him play his way into being a highly sought after NFL guy. That's my biggest what I'm excited for back there.
I'll just add on the linebacker front. Also curious to see, you know, kind of how they mix and match there, but also that tough Borland image of him being too slow.
Sure.
Is one of the lasting images of that defense last year. Like the speed and athleticism that's required to play linebacker against, again, it was an otherworldly Alabama offense, but you know, can that element be there, the speed in that linebacking group?
Yeah, and that's a question that they've got to answer, right? Because they have to. It's a combination of finding what I mentioned, that cohesive unit, and finding a unit that can play cohesive but also stop people. And if your best player can't cover someone, you're going to have to take. If your best linebacker can't. Is a liability in coverage, great versus run, but a liability in coverage, you're going to have to take him out of the game because teams are going to target it. And they're going to target it over and over and over and over again. And that's what I mean when it's like you got to find the guys that work together and can make things happen.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, let's get to Oklahoma, our fourth and final playoff contender of part two. They're one of the more interesting ones, I think, on a year in and year out basis, where we probably start from the same point where, you know, we love Lincoln Riley's offense. We feel usually pretty good about the quarterback he's got. Spencer Rattler's got a year under his belt now. It's clear, you know, Riley's putting a lot on his shoulders. And then this is still a program that has made the playoff, but has not yet won a game. Should it be Georgia, but that's a separate conversation. and because of the league they play in, you know, we're always going to talk about the defense. We're going to talk about Iowa State could be one of the best teams in the country this year. They're going to be a problem. Sure. And Oklahoma might have to go through them twice. So where do you want to start on the Sooners?
I guess let's start with this defense, right? You lose Bookie, Riley Hiles, and it's a team that just, I don't know. Who gets you excited on this team defensively? Nick Bonito? Nick Bonito? I'm being realistic. Like, I'm not being down on them. I think that they have potential to be good. I think I really like, obviously, I think that Grinch is a good defensive coordinator. They have questions about getting to the quarterback. We have questions about stopping the run. We have questions about playing assignment and alignment sound football. We have questions about giving up the big play with missed tackles in the back end. Questions about their angles. Questions about all those things. And when you have questions like that, it's really tough to do anything other than say, you know, stamp a question mark on the defense and wait and see if they fix those little problems. Because, and this is something that really, it really does piss me off when people talk about Oklahoma or talk about the Big 12, but Oklahoma specifically, because they keep saying there's no defense, their defense sucks, they can't play defense. And what I see is a roster full of guys that LSU, Alabama, Ohio State, USC, Oregon, Auburn, Georgia. This is a roster full of guys that all those teams wanted. All of them wanted these guys. So where's the disconnect when they get to campus? Where is that disconnect? These guys aren't that different from the guys that Bob Stoops was getting when they played good defense. These guys would have been recruited by Bob Stoops to play on those defenses. So where's the disconnect when these guys get to campus? I mean, I think about Caleb Kelly all the time. Kid was a monster. I thought he was going to be amazing at Oklahoma. Obviously injuries, but also just kind of flamed out. So where's the disconnect? I think that's the biggest question that I have, because these dudes are sought after. Teams want these guys. Teams that play what we call good defense. You think Arkansas wouldn't have killed to have a bunch of these guys on there to flip to sign with Arkansas? Absolutely. But Arkansas plays way better defense than them. Why? Because Arkansas plays sound defense. You think TCU wouldn't kill to have a bunch of these players? Absolutely. But TCU somehow plays better defense. Iowa State, the team you mentioned, they would have loved to get... obviously, Nick Bonilla. They would have loved to get Delarin Turner-Yell. They would have loved to get DJ Graham. They would have loved to get some of these guys. But yet, they play better defense with the guys they have. So, the question that needs to be answered about Oklahoma and with Oklahoma, and the question Oklahoma needs to answer, is what happens when they get there? What happens when they get there? Is this a strength and conditioning issue? Is it a practice time or practice attention issue? Is it a coaching problem? What is it? What is the problem about why they can't do it?
Are there any reasons that you think they're going to be better another year with Alex Grinch? I mean, this is someone that was, you know.
He's the man.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer. Like, he's been there. This is year three for him?
I think that's right.
Year three. So last year in a shortened season, they gave up 22 points, which was better than a year ago. They gave up 27. So incremental improvement, that's good. I think that's something that you can look forward to. It's 100% up to how they're able to stop the run. Like, you can't give up 200. I don't care that they won 62-28. You can't give up 200 rushing yards to Texas Tech. You can't do that. Because guess what? Oklahoma State's watching that. And they give up 200, but you still win. You win because you score quicker than they can score, but they're still amassing yardage because they're impatient. Like, I don't look at any of these numbers and think, great job, defense.
Right. Although, I do think, and this is something I've talked to defensive coaches in that league with, you do have to think differently about metrics that we're used to saying are good or bad.
Which is why I look at yards per play.
Right.
Two games with under 5 yards per play. Over 10 yards per play, even though they beat Oklahoma, even though they beat Florida, over 10 yards per play. The best defense. Oh, excuse me. I was looking at their offense. Let me flip it over. That's my bad. Yeah. So Oklahoma, 3-3-3. That's 3-4. So five games with under 5 yards per play. But 7.45 against Iowa State, that's not good. 7.6 against Kansas State, that's not good. Over six for Florida. Like, you think about that. If you're getting 6 yards per play, you're getting a first down every other play. It's just about these little things. Like, I just am, yeah, and that's my mistake. I was reading the wrong numbers. I was reading the Oklahoma numbers, which it's insane that they had 10 yards per play against Florida. But it's also not good that they gave up 6 yards per play against Florida. And looking at this is a team that, I mean, the reality of it is, if they didn't turn teams over as much, they'd be in more trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, they turn teams over. And that's a huge positive. That's something that you want to have happen. But Norwood's gone, Brown's gone. Two of the guys that led them in interceptions a season ago. And by the way, don't know if you got, this is something I've talked about a lot. Turnovers are fleeting. They're not all created equal. There's a humongous difference between a tip ball interception and a snap exchange or a missed zone read exchange that you recover, and putting your hat on the football and knocking it out, or covering someone so well that you pick it off. So it's just... They turned people over a season ago. I don't, and I'm not one of those people that's like, well, they had 16 interceptions a season ago. They'll just keep doing that, because that's really hard to do, especially with some new faces at the cornerback spot. So we'll see what happens. I think that they've got to get, like, you want to play in that, you want to play in the 3 to 4 yards per play. When you get into 6, now you have to turn people over, because otherwise they're just going to keep getting first downs. So, I don't know. I don't mean to ramble. I just am, like, I don't see anything on here that's going to make me get super excited about the defense. I do think that they have an opportunity to continue that incremental improvement. What was it, 6 points from a year? 2 years ago, 6 points to last year. But guess what? If they go down 6 more points this year, now we're talking about 15 points, and that's a really good defense.
Yeah, and I'm with you totally. I think you know, that incremental growth, the littler things, trying to figure out where those mistakes are coming from defensively, where those you know, is it a missed assignment? Is it conditioning? Whatever it might be, is part of the reason that everyone buys into Iowa State so much, which is why I think they're a really interesting foil in the Big 12, because they're right. So sound.
Yep.
And they, like, kind of what you were talking about with the amount of talent on the defense, like, they should be better versus, like, the sum is greater than the parts of the whole, which is kind of the Iowa State thing. And I'll also just mention, because again, we're sort of talking about, like, you know, that's going to be maybe, you know, their biggest challenge, certainly in the regular season. Like, this is also an Iowa State offense, or sorry, program that totally revamped their offseason conditioning. I wrote a story about this on The Athletic, so you can find it if you want, to be fresher later into the season. They felt like they were last year. So these are just things that are going to, you know, this is how people in, especially Iowa State, are going to attack Oklahoma. So these are just things to keep in mind. I mean, I think we're all excited to see them offensively. We're excited to see Rattler. But, you know, until that defense takes that next step, they're still going to have to outscore teams.
Yeah.
And that's how they win.
They can do it. They can outscore teams. I'm excited. I mean, listen, they raided Tennessee for Wanya Morris, who's awesome. And obviously Eric Gray, I thought, really started to come on a season ago. So I think they're sound at running back. They're going to be sound at quarterback. Spencer Rattler, obviously, a lot of people have projected as the first pick in the NFL draft. They got a lot of big experience up front. I mean, Bray Walker isn't even expected to start this year, and he can play. So that's going to be nice. And listen, you mentioned Chris Olave. You pick your poison with Theo Weiss, Jaden Hazelwood, and Marvin Mims. I mean, these guys are special. Hazelwood's another guy. He's from Georgia. Goes to Oklahoma and immediately just gets it done. Theo Weiss from Texas goes up there. He can get the job done. He's super physical. I love how angry he plays. And then Marvin Mims really came on strong as kind of a little go-to guy. So they've got wide receivers. Oh, and Austin Stogner. I don't think he gets mentioned enough at the tight end spot as someone who's just got the ability to go out and get the job done. So, yeah, I mean, I just think defensively, I want these players to be as good as they can be. I don't know where the disconnect happens when they get to campus, but I want them to be as good as they can be. I'm not going to bank on turnovers because they're so up and down on a year-over-year standpoint. So if you don't get turnovers, that means they're on the field longer, and if they're going to continue to give up more yards per play than the four, then they're going to have problems stopping teams. So that's the improvement I want to see.
All right, so we'll wrap there for part two of our contenders, the actual contenders, we can call it that. Those are the four teams that a lot of people have penciled into the playoff. They, for good, obvious reasons, we have seen them in there many, many times. And before we get to last call, just wanted to quick reminder, next week we are going to do a full-on preseason preview. If you have any fun categories or topics you want us to hit, please tweet us in the bleachers at Nicole Auerbach. But Felder, before we go, we have to do a last call segment. Sure. This is a part of the podcast for those who are new and listening for the first time. It is a rant or a rave. It is something you would cheers to at 2 a.m. as the bar is closing. And Felder, I'll go first. That we haven't hit on this at all in this podcast because everyone's been writing and talking about it all week. It's this concept of a Big Ten ACC Pac-12 alliance. And I've got to say, so we, you know, we can debate the merits of why these three leagues would do it, sure. You know, kind of as a counterpunch, countermeasure to the SEC being aggressive. But I just love the name. I think if it happened, happens. We got to call it the Alliance. It just flows really well. That's what it is. It would be alignment. It wouldn't be, you know, adding members to different conferences. And I think it provides that checks and balance for the SEC. But I just like the name. My iPhone, for whatever reason, maybe because of the AAF, but my iPhone's auto-correcting it. And I kind of like the way it looks.
I dig it. Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. It's going to be interesting, obviously, the next couple of years, how this all shakes out. For me, I'm just, honestly, I'm going to be positive and just be like, I'm like getting back into my football groove. And so it feels good to be back in the groove, back in my spreadsheets, back with my two monitors, back with my watching teams, back with watching who's doing what, back with charting plays, back with writing out a full schedule, back with doing all these things that are really kind of just like my bread and butter. Shout out to my guy.
Do you have your little notepad, your little notes?
Oh, yeah, I got my notes.
Okay. Just very small little piece of paper, very small handwriting.
No, it's a regular size notebook. It's not a small notebook.
I thought it was the piece of paper individually is small. No.
Oh. So this is okay. There's two different things. So this is my notebook. Okay.
Yes.
That's my notebook. It's a classic spiral college rule notebook. No, what I have when I go on air is a very small piece of paper with all the bullet points for everything that I have to talk about and any specific stats that I want to mention. It is literally I like to recycle. I care about the environment. So I go from our waste bin, like the little bin where people print out something that they didn't mean to print out. I take paper from there. I fold it in half. I write on the blank side. I fold it in half. Then I fold it into thirds. And then I have six faces of paper to write on. Six faces of paper. See, I'm excited about this because this is what like I love. I have six faces of paper to write on. If I'm doing a one-hour show, then I use all six because a one-hour show is usually six blocks. Or four long blocks, so I use all six sides of the paper. I turn the paper over this way, flip it back the other way.
See, but I can tell you. You look at you. You're so happy.
If I'm doing a half hour show, I only need two panels, sometimes three panels. So guess what? I flip that paper over, reuse the other side the next day or the next week. It's all coming together. I'm very excited. Got Campus Insiders starting this Wednesday with our preview show, and then next Saturday, I believe, we start the lead into the Conference USA games on Saturday with a little pregame show. So I'm excited to do all that stuff. And then obviously, we've got the Power Hour. I've got Tape Don't Lie. That comes out Thursday. I got Hand in the Dirt. I got something else. Oh, College Sports Now, too. So busy, busy, busy. But it feels good to be busy instead of kind of just sitting around doing nothing.
Absolutely. On that note, we will wrap Power Hour there. Next week will be our official season preview and predictions. Again, if you missed part one of our contenders, I guess contenders, pretenders, teams that could have a special season, scroll back on the Andy Staples and Show and Friends feed and you can find it. And as always, thank you for listening to Power Hour. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, sign up at theathletic.com/Nicole for a special. Andy Staples will be back on the feed. Ari Wasserman will be back on the feed. You get the new look, Andy Staples and Show feed, with lots of different content, lots of different perspectives all week. And Power Hour will be back next Tuesday. So for Michael Felder, I'm Nicole Auerbach. Thanks for listening.